All right, night flying in Denmark. I'm looking at this picture. It's a small plane, and like the moon behind it is
Oh,
huge.
wow.
It's almost surreal, just screams adventure, you know?
Yeah.
But before we go chasing moonbeams, there are rules, regs, the whole shebang.
Right.
So we're diving into night VFR in Denmark. And to guide us, we've got Handout NQ Novi 2023, which is quite a mouthful.
It is. This document's really interesting. It's bridging the gap, you see, between the old national regulations Denmark had and the current ESA regs, the European Union Aviation Safety Agency rules.
Oh, so it's like a bridge between the old and the new.
Exactly, guiding pilots through both.
Perfect timing then, because our pilot here is prepping for their night VFR rating, and they want it all. The key regulations, the gotchas, the practical stuff, you know, the works.
It's about understanding the why and the how of night flying.
Absolutely. And one of the first whys that kind of jumped out at me was how they define night. It's not just sunset and like off you go.
You'd think, right? But EASA, they're specific. Night is between the end of evening civil twilight and the beginning of morning civil twilight. And twilight itself, oh, that's a whole other definition, calculated by the sun's position and the horizon.
Hold on, so I could be up, the sky's like exploding with sunset colors, but I'm already in night territory according to the rules.
You got it. And that's why knowing exactly when day turns to night, legally speaking, is crucial.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be on the wrong side of that.
No. Not at all. Thankfully, you've got resources. The VFR flight guide, the AIP, they have tables for these twilight times. Even better, like Icaro's ATO's website. Or just ask air traffic control, they'll tell you the official cutoff.
It's like a secret handshake for the night owls.
Sort of, yeah.
Okay, so darkness figured out. Now, flight plans. This document mentions a big one and a small one. Is this like pilot humor or what?
A bit of both, actually. Big one, your standard full flight plan. Small one, it's more of a shortcut, a strip. And here's the thing, stick within a control zone at night. Small plan is fine, but venture out of that zone and you need the full deal.
Why the stricter rules outside the control zone, trying to keep us night owls on a tight leash?
Think of it this way, two-way radio communication, even more vital at night.
Right.
Inside a control zone, you're usually in constant contact with ATC. They've got your back.
Right.
But outside those zones, communication might be patchy. So that full flight plan, it's like a safety net. They know your route, timings, everyone's more at ease.
Okay, like leaving a note on the fridge just in case. Now, this section on supplementary night VFR rules, specifically for Denmark,
Right.
that caught my eye. Denmark isn't content with just the general ESA rules, they've got their own add-ons.
They do, and for good reason. It's about extra precautions in specific situations. For instance, as tempting as it might be, late night flybys over your friend's house, no go.
No buzzing the barbecue at 1,000 feet just because it's dark.
Exactly. Stricter rules over built-up areas, groups of people below a certain altitude at night, minimizing any potential risk.
Okay, no low-level flybys. Got it. But then there's this night VFR on top P, which sounds rebellious, like dancing above the clouds.
It does have a ring to it.
Yeah.
Flying above a cloud layer at night,
Yeah.
and under very specific conditions, allowed. But, and this is straight from the Icaro's ATO folks, they strongly advise against it. The risks, they say, are just not worth it.
And these guys are usually all about making sure pilots know their stuff.
Right. They even point out incidents where pilots got disoriented worse.
Yeah.
It's a good reminder that just because it's allowed doesn't mean it's a good idea, especially at night.
Makes you think twice, that's for sure. But speaking of being cautious, what about fuel? Night VFR, they're specific about that too, like packing extra snacks for a road trip, but it's liters, not potato chips.
It is about being prepared. Night VFR in Denmark, you need a 45-minute fuel reserve on top of what gets you to your destination.
So if I'm usually landing with the gauge practically on empty, I need a bigger buffer at night.
Exactly. Think of it this way, engine issue, or you need to divert at night, finding a landing spot, much trickier. That extra fuel gives you options. Time to think without that fuel gauge screaming at you.
Options are good, especially up in the air in the dark. All right, enough serious stuff. Let's talk airport lights, something a little more, well, visually stunning. Although, get this, the document says runway lights aren't always mandatory for night landings. Did I read that right?
You did. Now, before you go landing in pitch black, there's a nuance. They use the word should, not shall, for runway lights. Strong recommendation, but.
There's always a but, isn't there?
Right. Icaro's ATO is clear. Stick to airfields approved for night operations. They'll have at least basic runway lighting. Don't try landing at a field that's not equipped just because you think you can handle it.
Solid advice. Let's say I'm landing at Ringsted Airport, EKRS. I see in the VFR flight guide it's approved for night ops. What kind of lighting setup am I looking at?
Ringsted's a good example of basic setup. You'll have runway edge lights outlining the sides and threshold lights marking the beginning and end. But that's about it. No fancy approach lighting system or PPI.
PPI, those cool lights, we'll get to those. But how does a smaller airfield like EKRS stack up against a busier one? Say, Roskilde, EKRK.
Roskilde at night, it's like a symphony of lights compared to Ringsted. Approved for VFR, IFR, day, night, the works, runway edge lights, taxiway lights, approach lights, threshold lights.
And PPI, you said?
And PPI, of course. Each light has a purpose, giving you, the pilot, way more information.
Like the difference between navigating by starlight and having a full-on spotlight? Speaking of spotlights, this document has a cool picture of the rotating beacon on top of the Roskilde Tower. Looks like a lighthouse for pilots. What's the story with that?
That beacon helps pilots locate the airfield from a distance, especially with all the city lights around Roskilde.
Yeah.
And that brings up a key point about night flying. Pre-flight familiarization is crucial, especially for nighttime. You need to know what to expect when you arrive, study the airport diagrams, the lighting system, be mentally prepared for what you'll see out the windshield. That beacon's like a welcoming committee guiding you in.
And after you navigate those welcoming lights, make a smooth landing, we come to perhaps the most disorienting part of night flying. Taxiing. Even in daylight, those taxiways can feel like a maze. But at night, with just those blue lights, talk about a recipe for confusion.
Different world out there for sure. It's all about understanding the language of blue. Those blue lights, taxiway edge lights, your best friend at night. Staying on that center line, even more crucial when you can't see what's beyond those markers.
And then there's the signage, this diagram. It's like its own language. Hold lines, markings, arrows. There's even a sign to stop pilots accidentally turning onto the runway.
Runway incursions are serious, and at night, the stakes are higher. Those signs are vital for safety, keeping traffic flowing smoothly, even in the dark.
I bet a wrong turn at night could lead to some interesting conversations with ATC. Anything to help with those nighttime taxiway maneuvers?
Absolutely. Taxiway maps on your GPS or a good aviation app, they're worth their weight in gold. They show you exactly where you are, where to go. A lifesaver on larger airfields like Roskilde.
It's amazing how much technology can help with those more stressful aspects of flying, even at night. But let's be honest, some things are best left to clear skies and daylight. Take radio failure, for example. Imagine that happening in the dead of night.
It's every pilot's nightmare, right? But that's why knowing your light signals and the procedures in BL-701, your radio failure Bible, they're so crucial. Your backup when the airwaves go silent.
So we're talking old school communication, those light signals from the tower.
Exactly. And you'll get to practice those during your night VFR training. So if that dreaded radio failure ever happens, you're ready.
That's reassuring because even the thought of it is enough to make my palms sweat. Let's shift gears to a slightly less panic-inducing topic, landing, but specifically landing by light. We've mentioned PPI a couple of times. After watching that simulated Roskilde landing video, those PPI lights seem pretty darn important for sticking a smooth approach.
They're not just pretty lights. PPI, Precision Approach Path Indicator, it's visual feedback, a heads-up display for your glide path.
So those four lights, two red, two white, they're like a report card for your descent.
Exactly. Each red and white combo sends a message about your position. Two red, two white. You're spot on, that perfect 3-degree glide slope.
You know, all red means you're coming in hot, too low. What about VSI and APPI, other systems mentioned? What's the deal with those?
VSI, Visual Approach Slope Indicator. Think of it like PPI's older, wiser sibling. You'll find it at some older airfields. APPI, abbreviated PPI, the minimalist cousin, just two lights instead of four. You'll see that on the runways at Vamdrup Airport, for example.
So no matter where you're landing in Denmark, you're likely to encounter one of these visual guidance systems. But let's up the ante. Imagine you're coming in, smaller airfield, no PPI, no fancy light show. That's a whole other ball game.
Adds a layer of complexity.
Right.
Without those visual cues, it's instruments and, dare I say it, math.
Math at night. You're just being cool.
Not to worry. It's not rocket science. There's a handy trick. Aim for a descent rate of 300 feet per nautical mile. Check your ground speed on your GPS, multiply by 5, and that's your descent rate for that 3-degree glide slope.
And the document even has a video showing exactly how it's done.
It demonstrates a pilot approaching a runway. No PPI. 2 nautical miles out, checks his ground speed, adjusts his vertical speed indicator. He's constantly cross-checking altitude, distance to the runway, making small adjustments. a fantastic visual guide.
Visuals are good, especially when talking about landing in the dark, but there's a catch, isn't there? This document mentions something about the airfield's elevation and these calculations. Did I make that up?
You absolutely did not. It's one of those small but crucial details. You always factor in the airfield's elevation to your target altitude. Let's take Ringsted Airport. It's at 115 feet above sea level. So 5 nautical miles out, your target altitude isn't 1,500 feet, it's 1,615 feet. That 115 feet makes all the difference.
So always double check that elevation. No shortcuts when it comes to landing, even in daylight, right? But now we have these amazing GPS systems, some of which can even simulate a glide slope. It's like having a virtual PAPI right there in the cockpit.
It's incredible they create an artificial glide slope, center line, displayed right on your instruments, like an instrument landing system. Approaching a runway without PAPI, especially at night, that visual approach on your GPS can be a game changer, helping you maintain a stable and precise descent.
It's like having a co-pilot whispering in your ear, easy does it, you've got this.
Okay, so we've covered PAPI, VSI, GPS, but let's get real. How much can you actually see up there on a pitch black night? Is it just a blur or does the moon make a difference? The $1 million question, right? And the answer, as with most things in aviation, it depends. Moon phase, cloud cover, huge factors. Remember those simulations, the night views over Roskilde?
Those were pretty cool, especially how they showed the impact of moonlight.
Full moon, you could practically see the whole town. No moon. Like staring into a black hole with a few scattered lights.
Exactly. Which makes me wonder, any strategies for those less than ideal nights? Moon's hiding, it's just you and a sky full of stars.
It's all about choosing your checkpoints wisely, those visual landmarks that keep you oriented.
Yeah.
Edges of towns, well-lit towers, even bright roads. On those darker nights, those are your guiding stars.
And let's not forget those trusty navigation aids, VORs, NDPs, even the age of GPS, they still have their place.
Absolutely. Like backup singers for navigation, always there when the lead singer needs a break. But keep those visual navigation skills sharp, too.
Because what happens when the instruments go down?
You'd be glad you paid attention during those map reading exercises. But speaking of staying sharp, let's not forget about staying current. Earning that night VFR rating is a huge accomplishment, but it's not one and done.
So I can't just frame my certificate and call it a day?
Sadly, no. EASA has requirements for maintaining those night flying privileges. The general rule is at least one takeoff, approach, and landing at night within the preceding 90 days.
Use it or lose it when it comes to night flying. What if you let things lapse a bit?
Haven't flown at night within 90 days. You'll need a proficiency check with an instructor to get those privileges back. A tune-up for your skills.
A night flight refresher course.
Exactly. And while we're talking staying current, there's the aircraft itself. EASA has a list, equipment your aircraft needs for those after-dark adventures.
Let's see, we've got those NCO.IDE excerpts from EASA, that helpful diagram of the cockpit. Looks like we've got anti-collision lights, position lights, a landing light, and enough lighting so you can actually see what you're doing inside the cockpit.
You nailed it. Being visible, having redundant systems, because night flying is inherently more demanding. It's darker, for one.
That's an astute observation. But seriously, making sure your aircraft is properly equipped, ready for low visibility, that's critical for a safe and enjoyable night flight. Which brings us to those FAA recommendations for night VFR, and this is where things get interesting. We've gone deep on the rules, the practical stuff, the equipment, but these FAA recommendations, they add a whole other layer. It's the psychology of night flying, how our brains can play tricks on us up there in the dark.
It's easy to forget how much we rely on our vision when we fly, especially during those critical phases. At night, with fewer visual cues, our brains work harder, and sometimes they take shortcuts, leading to those misinterpretations, those illusions.
So it's not just about knowing the rules, it's about understanding how our own perception can be affected by the darkness.
Exactly, and the FAA highlights some fascinating stuff. The black hole approach, for example.
That sounds a bit ominous.
It can be. Imagine approaching a runway at night. Terrain below is dark, maybe water, unlit fields. All you see are the runway lights.
So your whole visual world shrinks down to those pinpoints of light.
Exactly. And without those surrounding cues, your brain struggles to judge distance, depth. You might feel higher than you actually are.
And that could lead to problems on final, right?
Absolutely. Increased risk of landing short, especially for pilots not prepared for this illusion. The FAA really stresses relying on your instruments, the altimeter, the glide slope, even when your eyes are telling you something different.
Trust your instruments. They're smarter than you are.
Exactly. And it's not just about black hole situations, bright runway lights, the very things meant to help, can also mess with our perception.
Okay, hold on. How can runway lights, those beacons of hope, work against us?
Our brains, they equate brightness with proximity. So approaching a runway, high-intensity lights blazing, it can make you think you're closer than you are.
So you might fly a higher approach.
Exactly. Counterintuitive, but those bright lights, especially after a long night flight, can lead to a less stable approach. Again, cross-check. Verify what your senses tell you against the instruments.
Stay vigilant. Stay ahead of those potential illusions. Now, the FAA recommendations also talk about night emergencies, and for good reason.
Hope for the best, prepare for the worst. And those night emergencies, they just amplify the challenges.
Darkness just adds another layer of stress to an already stressful situation.
Exactly. Reduced visibility makes everything harder. Finding a landing area, assessing the situation, those split-second decisions. The FAA stresses staying calm, maintaining control, working through those procedures methodically.
Good advice for any emergency, but especially up there at night.
Have a plan. Know your aircraft. Trust your training. And part of that plan, if you need to land off airport at night, choose a site as close to public access as possible.
Makes sense. Increase those chances of getting help quickly. This night VFR deep dive has been, well, eye-opening, to say the least. It's more than just lights and talking to ATC.
It's about respecting the challenges, the rewards of flying after dark. Preparation, vigilance, understanding your aircraft and your limits as a pilot.
So for you aspiring night owls, before those moonlit flights, remember what we've discussed, those illusions, the darker-than-dark scenarios, and never underestimate a well-planned approach, literally and figurative.
Well said. Embrace the challenge, expand your skills, experience the magic of flight from a whole new perspective.
Because there's nothing quite like a sky full of stars from the cockpit. Until next time, happy landings.